you want to see all the varied comments, please look in on that, because people weighed in all week, not only members here, but others. One person said, robes in a choir in a church remind me of Sister Act, the movie. And there are some real fun comments on there, but robes are back. Also, I received some interesting gossip this week. Somebody told me that they heard we were going to start a Saturday evening service that included a bluegrass band. It sounds like fun to me, but I hadn't heard that yet, so I was very interested in that idea, but just so you know, the rumor isn't true. Several years ago, I accompanied Eric on a business trip to San Francisco, and during the day, he took some classes on how to administer and teach the Myers-Briggs inventory for personality types. While he was in class, I explored the Bay Area and took a tour of wine country. Not a bad deal. We met up in the evenings and we exchanged stories, and each evening he had, well, a new revelation about some member of our family or friends. And he would tell me about why he thought people we knew related to each other in certain ways. He was so enthralled with the intricacies of how different personalities responded to similar situations that he just couldn't wait to tell me. And through the eyes of the Myers-Briggs, he gained an appreciation, although it was temporary, of a variety of personality profiles in our family and the strengths and weaknesses of each profile. Well, as we were talking, it occurred to me that we need a similar approach to spirituality, a healthy and positive way to understand how different people relate to God in different ways, and that no particular way is right or wrong. So the sermon series started last week. It's an exploration of various spiritual paths, different and equally acceptable ways of demonstrating our love for God. I'm using Gary Thomas's book called Sacred Pathways, Discover Your Soul's Path to God, and this is the major resource for this sermon series. Now, in his book, Thomas describes 9 different major personality/spiritual temperaments. Many of these are exercises. There are some basic presuppositions that I want to acknowledge to start with. The first presupposition is that there is no best or right spiritual pathway to God, unless it's mine. Joke. Most Christians have at least one pathway that we prefer. We may have a dominant spiritual pathway, but we also use several secondary pathways. And the third presupposition is that there are strengths and also weaknesses for each spiritual pathway. Now, given those presuppositions, then, my goal for this sermon series are just two: to increase our awareness of various ways that we can relate to God so that we can understand ourselves, but also others' ways of experiencing the sacred. And the second goal is to offer some new ways to expand and enrich our spiritual journeys. Today we're going to talk about 2 of the 9 spiritual pathways, and the 2 we're hitting today are the naturalist and the sensate. If you want a little survey to help determine what your dominant spiritual pathway is, as Paul mentioned, there are links on Facebook and on the church website, and there are hard copies in the foyer. If you don't want to do it electronically, the ushers will have a handout for you. So first, the naturalist. Everybody last week, after hearing the introduction to the sermon series, said, "I'm a naturalist." How many of you think you're a naturalist? You experience God in nature? Oh, come on, there were more of you than that. Okay. The naturalist is a person who would prefer to leave a building, however beautiful or austere the building is, to pray to God beside a river. Does that sound like you? More of you are going to raise your hand as we go along. So leave the books behind. Forget the political demonstrations. Just let this person take a walk in the woods, a mountain hike or bike, gaze at a field of daisies. Naturalists believe that nature itself proclaims God is. And they may learn more from watching an ant colony or looking at a peaceful lake than from reading a book or listening to a sermon. Their favorite scriptures are likely to be the parables of Jesus that are based in nature or the Psalms. Think about all the biblical texts that talk about encounters with God, various people's encounters with God. Most of them, if not all, happened in nature, in a wilderness, in the desert, the mountain, a river, a burning bush. In fact, as I think about it, I actually don't recall in the Bible any stories about people meeting God in a building. So listen to our ancient text through the ears of the naturalist and hear these ancient words and the truth they speak and all the various natural places that the psalmist describes. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So naturalists have learned lessons in the out of doors, and at least three lessons that those of us who don't have this as our primary spiritual temperament can learn from naturalists are to see spiritual truths more clearly, see God more clearly, and learn to rest. Looking at a rose, a naturalist might discern that beauty is often mixed in life with thorns. St. Francis of Assisi wrote, "You will find more laboring in the woods than you will ever among the books. Woods and stones will teach you what you can never hear from any master." Now, in the middle of a hectic schedule in ministry, Jesus often looked for a quiet place to pray and to be replenished, and he actually taught his disciples to do the same thing. So imagine in the church today, or even in our church, what we might think of Jesus as a minister, always leaving the building and the city to recharge his batteries. We're told that Jesus often escaped to a quiet place, and he took his disciples out on a boat to rest, because being surrounded by water is a really refreshing experience. Now, earlier I mentioned that each spiritual pathway has its own strengths and weaknesses. Some of the potential drawbacks for a naturalist are to be inclined to become isolated. While Jesus did escape to the quiet of a mountain, he did it so that he could come back prepared for an active ministry. So in other words, the golf course didn't call to him every Sunday. The naturalist also needs to be cautious about using nature to escape life's active work of being a follower of Jesus. Another potential drawback is the temptation to have too much introversion. The out of doors can kind of shrink our world with introspection. The third caution for a naturalist is idolatry. The worship of nature itself is called pantheism, and there's a difference between saying the earth is the Lord's and saying the earth is the Lord. You see the difference. So having voiced these cautions, I would encourage you to try a naturalist activity this week to enrich your spiritual journey. Grab a jacket, pick up a walking stick, and step out into a world that never closes from the experience of God. The second pathway that I want to talk about today is the sensate, and I talked about it with the children a bit. Sensate Christians want to be lost in the beauty, the awe, the splendor of God. They're particularly drawn to the liturgical, the majestic, and the grand. When these sensate Christians worship, they're filled with the sights and sounds and smells that just overwhelm their senses. So they may like incense if they aren't allergic. They might like intricate architecture or classical music or formal language that sends the heart soaring. Now, for those of us who are not sensates, the whole discussion, for example, about whether to have a Roman Catholic Mass in Latin or in English was really quite a ridiculous exercise, right? I mean, how many of us criticized the Catholic Church for that? But for a sensate who experiences God's presence in ritual language, it was a discussion of vital importance. And you don't have to be a Roman Catholic in order to have a sensate pathway toward God as your dominant spiritual path. There are some of us who feel very close to God through the sounds of a large pipe organ. Oh, Helen, I wish I had said, oh, there she is. But I thought about having her, you know, cue in at that moment. I should have told her, yes, I know. And other people appreciate religious art, and through it they have a vision of the sacred. Not only art, but also religious architecture is another vehicle through which sensates experience God. Have you ever walked into a big cathedral and just sat down and let the power of God wash over you? That's something a sensate experiences. There's a lot of scripture to demonstrate that humans experience God through the senses. Like I said, chocolate chip cookies, you know, that is definitely a way through to God. The glory of God in heaven is described in the Bible as this elaborate affair. It's rarely quiet, to say the least. Think about Ezekiel's description of approaching God. If you don't have it just on the tip top of your memory of the Bible, let me tell you about it. And listen for the senses. When Ezekiel approached God, he first felt a wind. Then he sees flashes of lightning, a brilliant light, fantastic creatures, a magnificent and stunning throne of sapphire that casts off a blinding light. He hears the rush of roaring water, the sound of wings flapping, and a loud rumbling. He is asked to eat a scroll, and it tastes sweet. And all of this is so religiously enthralling that as he sits down, he is stunned for 7 whole days. Now, we may not be able to fully experience what Ezekiel did, but consider how many of us are drawn to the midnight Christmas Eve service with rich tradition. There's a part of us that loves the candlelight, the music, the ambiance, the sensuous power of the ritual, that we will stay up past our bedtimes and even go to an unfamiliar church just to have that experience. Now, Christians who are on a sensate path must be careful, like any other spiritual pathway, of some pitfalls. Some of you may have had an experience of going forward at an altar call because you were especially wrapped up in the moment. And then, for some, later questioned what was really going on in your spirit. Were you wrapped up in that moment, or were you wrapped up in God? Sensates can be drawn into a false sense of worship and the purpose of leading us toward God. But if we stop along the way because we're caught up in the senses, we've missed the point. Or if we're lured into a false sense of spirituality by the power of our senses, we again have missed the point. But having said those pitfalls, let me recommend to you that if you want to increase your connection to God, you might want to try experimenting with some things that speak to your senses. In fact, this week in seminary, you know that graduate course work, 87 credit hours that Paul has to do for his master's of divinity? Well, one of his very hardest assignments alongside writing papers this week was to make homemade bread. Now, really, is that a graduate course requirement? But it was, and it's a deeply spiritual one. Why would a seminary suggest that activity? Well, now, to be clear, it was one of several choices that the students had to increase their spiritual connection to God. Walk a labyrinth, bake bread, whatever the choices were, the point was to expand their spiritual experiences beyond what is normal or customary, because not everyone experiences God in reading textbooks and writing papers. So a simple cross, a stick of incense, a CD of music, or making your own music, a piece of artwork, these are all ways to invoke the experience of God. And the five senses are undoubtedly God's most effective inroad to our hearts. Now, the holy in each of us has a great desire to be part of something bigger than ourselves. And we're all on this journey toward God, seeking those holy moments in our everyday experience. So as your minister, and also as your co-journeyer, I urge you to use some of these ideas to seek and to explore new ways to experience, enhance, and deepen that sacred pathway you have to God. I'll be anxious to hear your experiences next week as we discover two new spiritual pathways. And please feel free to give me your insights and your experiences as we make this journey together. As you're able, I would invite you to stand as the choir sings our choral benediction. And you can join in because you know it. So go out this week and find new paths to God. Share them with others and listen to what others have found on their walk. Amen.